We're going to get into into a little bit of English football, though, because we do have two massive games coming up this week and a whole host of games coming up over Tuesday and Wednesday night. So we're going to get our first guest of the show ready and on the line for you right now. He's a debutant to the World Football Daily Airwaves, but that doesn't stop him from being an everly impressive sports journalist around these parts here in the UK. Joining me for his debut appearance on World Football Daily, a writer for both one of my favourites, Shoot Magazine, and of course the Metro as well here in the UK, is none other than Chris Winterburn. Chris, an absolute pleasure to have you debuting on the show today, mate. How are you doing today?
A pleasure to you. I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm very well, mate, very well. First and foremost, how long have you been contributing to Shoot Magazine? Because I remember picking that up as a kid and just loving, you know, flipping through, getting all the free posters and stuff like that. How long have you been doing that for?
Oh, well, it's mainly an online magazine now, but I remember the annuals they do were fantastic. I remember reading them as a kid, but I've been working for them just under 6 months now.
Very nice, mate. Very nice. We'll have to direct everybody to your work in and around the web, and of course your Twitter account as well, where we can find you and follow you at ChrisWin4. Chris, it's a pleasure to have you joining us today, mate. There's plenty going on. First and foremost, I wanted to get into some news that started breaking last night and continues to roll on, coming from the northeast with Newcastle. The departure, it looks like, of Johan Cabaye and the signing of Luke De Jong getting set for the Magpies today. First and foremost, Cabaye. They're going to get a hefty sum of money, but is he irreplaceable in that Newcastle side?
Well, it's funny you should say that, because there's an interesting stat here. In the games Cabaye hasn't played for Newcastle this season, they've only won 20%, but with him in the side, they've won over double that.
Well, I think points means prizes, don't they? It kind of shows exactly what Cabaye means to this side. But they are getting, as I say, a hefty sum of money, Chris. So do you expect them to be delving deep into the transfer window and trying to find somebody to replace him, or are they going to stick with what they've got and try and fill in gaps elsewhere, do you think?
Well, I think they've got to try and replace him, because he's been the main creative hub of that side for the last two seasons, and Ben Arthur's not consistent enough, I don't think. Cisse's gone off the boil completely. So there's a lot of onus on Loic Remy to provide moments of brilliance, and you can't expect one player to do that for the rest of the season. I think they've got to go and get another creative midfielder.
Who's on the horizon then? Who do you think could Newcastle snag? Because they're a side that obviously had a poor start to the start of this season, but have been on the up and up since. This is going to be a big knockback for them.
Oh, most definitely. I think the one name that's been linked to Newcastle even since the summer is Remy Cabaye from Montpellier, and I think he would be a very astute signing, because he's as creative as Cabaye, and there's a bit more flair about him in the final third as well.
Don't have to change too much on the back of the shirt either with Cabaye and Cabaye just swapping over there. And when it comes to other movements from Newcastle, obviously today Sky Sports here in the UK talking about Borussia Mönchengladbach forward Luke De Jong travelling up to Newcastle for a medical today. I've been having a look at De Jong though, and I have to say, not thoroughly impressed from his last two seasons. Newcastle are struggling for goals from their centre forwards this year anyway. Do you believe that De Jong is the right man to come in and fill that void?
Well, they've struggled for goals since Demba Ba left last January. Cisse has gone off the boil since then, and Remy's been a breath of fresh air. But De Jong, he did well in his time in Holland, scored goals, got the move to Germany, and he's done well. Fallen a bit out of favour, but I think, yeah, he could definitely provide goals. He's a finisher, simple as that.
Let's hope that it can turn around Newcastle's second half of the season, push them up towards the Europa League spots for the Magpies fans. Elsewhere around England, something that maybe here on World Football Daily we focused so much on, excuse me, Chris, Wan Mata's transfer last week. Didn't talk too much about Mohamed Salah and him coming to Chelsea for £11 million. Salah, though, however much he's impressed in Europe, is he going to be able to break through into this Chelsea starting 11, or is he very much a backup at Stamford Bridge?
Well, you look at the players they've got in that attacking midfield three. They've got Hazard, Oscar and Willian starting. It's difficult to see how he'll break in there straight away. Excuse me. But he'll definitely play a part in the side, because as he's proven against Chelsea with Basel, he's an excellent player, really causes defences problems.
Is he a bit of a steal for £11 million? Do you think somebody of what we've seen of his quality in Europe is worthy maybe of a slightly heftier transfer fee? Have Chelsea got a bargain on their hands, do you think?
Well, especially in the current market, you have to feel they have got a bargain. And he's very young. He's only going to get better with Premier League experience. So at the minute, it looks like 11 million could be a good deal.
Now, of course, Manchester United is still looking around and talks today about them replacing Rio Ferdinand with a new centre-back and eyeing up Luke Shaw as well. There's plenty of names being linked to Manchester United. Firstly, Chris, though, is January the right time for United to go buying? Should they have done all of this back in August and made more of an effort in the summer to prepare summer transfers as opposed to doing it now?
Well, I think the summer was a very difficult period. Obviously, Sir Alex had left and David Gill was also a big blow, the chief executive. Ed Woodward's coming in that position and David Moyes, obviously, is the new manager. I think it was very difficult for them to get players in the summer. They didn't really know the squad. They had to analyse where they wanted to go with the current squad, see who they wanted to keep and get a view of all the players. Fellaini and Baines were obviously the two he set out in his mind as the targets. Obviously, Baines didn't come off, but Fellaini did. And I think the summer was always going to be difficult to bring players in. And he's shown by his work in January, he's looking to improve this side. Now he's seeing the squad.
Isn't there a possibility, though, that with what the January transfer window brings, that kind of air of panic, that he could end up overbuying on some of these players if he is able to pull off any of the transfers that United are looking to bring in?
Well, that's a definite possibility. Of course, you're going to overspend. As I said, in January, the only real transfers you can get are, as I like to call them, circumstance transfers. Like, take, for example, Nemanja Matic going back to Chelsea. He wanted to go back to Chelsea. It wasn't too expensive for a player of his quality, and that happened. Mata, again, he wasn't getting games at Chelsea. It was circumstance that he became available. If you really want to get your main targets in January, it's difficult to pay for a reasonable price. Just look at Carroll when he went from Newcastle to Liverpool. That was a target transfer, but they had to pay way over the odds.
It's some of the names coming out for United, especially in this role to replace Rio Ferdinand. A fair bit of criticism of him in the English press over the last day or so. One of the names popping up is Dante. United are meant to be quite keen, apparently having approached him before, but do you really see a player of Dante's quality at a team like Bayern Munich wanting to leave, considering he plays such a big part for them already in the season?
I think in a word, no. He's enjoyed a great two seasons with Bayern Munich since he's moved from Gladbach. He was a bit of an unknown quantity at Gladbach. Only really the Bundesliga knew how good he was. He wasn't a well-known quantity around Europe. And he's moved to Bayern, really, really picked up his game, got into the Brazil squad. And he's just looked like a top, top class centre-half. And he'd be a great replacement for Ferdinand. But as I said, I just can't see him leaving Bayern and I expect a new contract sooner rather than later at Bayern.
Replacing Ferdinand, is that something you think should have maybe happened a little sooner than now? He's been a kind of a star on the wane for a while now and his pace has been dropping and dropping with age. Should this have been something that maybe Sir Alex did a year and a half, 2 years ago?
Well, his pace has certainly lost him in the last couple of years. I remember a game against Manchester City, the 4-3. He had a nightmare that day. Craig Bellamy tore him apart. Yeah. But last season, he was one of the most consistent centre-halves for United. And that was, I think, why Sir Alex didn't look to replace him, maybe in last January, because he was playing so well and he looked like he'd learned to work without his pace, like stand a couple of yards off an attacker. But it's definitely, with him expected to leave this summer, it's something David Moyes has to look at maybe now with an eye on the summer.
And just further down the table before we move into the games tonight, Chris, West Ham taking both Borriello and Nocerino out of Italy and bringing them down to London for that relegation battle. Is this going to be enough, though? Considering unknown quantities, the adaption to Premier League football from continental style of football, and West Ham need performances, some big performances quickly.
Well, I've said if you want players to really dig in and get you out of a relegation scrap, I don't think Marco Borriello is the one. He's had spells with Juventus, Roma and AC Milan, and in all three he scored fleeting amounts of goals, but he's never really impressed. He's looked out of his depth at a top club, and some would say West Ham's the right level for him. He might be able to do well there, but he doesn't strike me as a particularly hard worker who could really give West Ham the boost they need to avoid relegation.
It's going to be tough to get that boost with their fixture coming up on Wednesday night. Tomorrow night they go to Stamford Bridge to take on Chelsea. This should be smooth running for Chelsea. I noticed on your blog you've been talking about how you can close down Eden Hazard. Do you think people do give Chelsea too much space when they come flying forward in attack? And should West Ham adopt that approach of getting in their faces and closing down the angles that midfield three behind the main attacker have to work with?
Well, it's difficult. As a defending team against Chelsea, you can't be between a rock and a hard place, because if you push too far up right into the back of Hazard, he's just going to turn you. But if you stand too far off, like the Stoke defenders did, Jeff Cameron in particular on Sunday, you give them too many options. You make the mind up for the attacker. You've got to get close and not allow them any room. So if they move one way, you've got to be going with them. And it's the only way, really, you can stop a player of Hazard's intelligence and quick feet.
I suppose it's that touch-type rule, you know, standing with your arm on the back of the shoulder but stood about 3 yards away, kind of arm's length or whatever. That's something my old man tried to teach me when we were playing, kind of when I was a nipper, that's for sure. There are bigger and better games, I'm sure, although Chelsea-West Ham will be a cracking London derby, I'm sure, on Wednesday. But there are bigger and better games coming up in midweek. And, of course, Liverpool against Everton produced an incredible game of football, arguably the best game of football that we've seen so far this season at Goodison Park. Going to Anfield under the lights on Tuesday. I mean, there's almost no need to build up the rivalry between these two sides, but especially now with them both battling for European football, this is going to be an epic evening.
Well, it's been the case for the last couple of seasons or so. I know Everton finished above Liverpool, and the rivalry, the teams have got closer, and it's really built up the hype. And going into this game, there's one point which separates the two sides, and I just think it's going to be a really interesting fixture, because Liverpool, they've got injuries at the back, Glenn Johnson, and that brings young John Flanagan in at right back, and I think Morales and Baines could really cause him problems on the left-hand side.
You're looking as well at a battle of two very impressive Premier League strikers in Luis Suarez against Romelu Lukaku. Who's going to do more damage, though? Because Martinez has got a very stable defensive unit at Everton this season.
Yeah, definitely. Jagielka and Distan, right from the first game of the season, they've been solid. I still think they have the best defensive record in the Premier League. Mm. Certainly the least defeats. But it will be difficult for them to contain Suarez, as they found in the two matches last year. He's just so elusive with his movement. You can't get close to him and then he's gone past you. But certainly Lukaku, with Liverpool's defence having been shaky for a couple of years, certainly Skrtel and Agger haven't filled me with confidence. I would say Lukaku and Traore, the new signing if he plays, could really cause them problems with their physicality.
Where are the key battles in the Merseyside derby tonight? Is it the centre of midfield where Barry's going to have to try and take over against Gerrard, or is it going to be on those flanks where Liverpool love to push down with the likes of Raheem Sterling? Where are going to be the key areas to watch this evening?
Well, unfortunately as it is, Brian Oviedo had been playing left wing recently for Everton. He picked up that dreadful injury at the weekend. So you expect Morales to come, or Pienaar to come onto the left side playing just in front of Leighton Baines, and they're not going to track back as well as Oviedo did. So you think if Raheem Sterling gets a run on that right-hand side, he's going to have a really good evening, because Baines on his own, he won't get too much help from the left winger.
Elsewhere this evening as well, we've got Manchester United taking on Cardiff. The return of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer to Old Trafford, but obviously in the opposition dugout. And Cardiff just sealing Wilfried Zaha. There's a bit of a love in between these two teams going on at the moment. You know, it's all very smiles and very pleasant handshakes between the two sides.
I don't think it could have been expected to be any different. Ole Solskjaer is one of the most respected former players at Old Trafford. His work rate for the club when he was a player was unbelievable, and he had that famous goal in the European Cup final of 99. The fans remember that. They remember those moments, and they treat the ex-players with respect, and he'll get a great reception at Old Trafford tonight.
As for the Wilfried Zaha loan, how does that stand in your eyes? Is this, again, he's been kind of rotting away in the reserves at United after so much expectation going into this season. Great move for him, but do you think he's ever going to be accepted at United and used to any great effect?
Well, I wrote a piece on this last week, actually, about how his loan move to Cardiff is just perfect for all parties. Manchester United haven't been able to fit him into the team for whatever reason, after he had a really, really impressive pre-season. And Cardiff are getting a player who is known to be bright on the wings. He can go past people and put crosses in. He's a real live wire on the right or left-hand side, and that's something Cardiff have lacked on the wings this year. They've got Craig Noon playing on the right, who's having an excellent year, but Bellamy's found himself on the fringes, and they've not really got that star man on the left-hand side. And if you put Zaha on there, he's going to cause problems and really improve the balance of the team. And Solskjaer, after his work with Manchester United's reserves a number of years back, he knows how to look after young players.
Bold prediction, but Cardiff sat level on 18 points with Sunderland and West Ham at the bottom of the table. It's so close down there. But do you think Zaha gives them enough to mount a considerable challenge to stay up in the Premier League this year? Or does more need to change?
Well, you look at the players they brought in this January window. You've got Fabio Da Silva, Zaha, Mats Møller-Daly from Molde and Magnus Wolf Ekrem from Heerenveen. And those are players which really add something to the side, creativity and individual brilliance. And that's what you need to stay up in the Premier League. And if you compare that to, say, West Ham, who haven't really strengthened too much and they look to be in a bad run of form, you think you struggle to see how they're going to stay up. And Sunderland as well, under Gus Poyet, they've been a different side. The work rate, particularly off the ball with pressing, has been fantastic. And Cardiff and Sunderland have both made moves in this January, and in terms of playing style, to make them look like they can stay up. West Ham, on the other hand, I think will struggle.
Tomorrow night, we've got Tottenham against Manchester City. And this one, again, another big game of two sides firmly in form. Tottenham, who have really found their feet under Tim Sherwood, taking on City, who are just ultra explosive at home. We thought there was going to be the cup upset at one point over the weekend, and it wasn't to be. A City too strong for anybody right now? Or a Tottenham's defence with the likes of Dawson and Vertonghen, are they going to be able to slow down what's been a rampant City attack that's found a way form again?
Well, you just have to look at it domestically. Manchester City have swept away most teams before them. I mean, Arsenal, when they played Arsenal were the form team in the league and they put six goals past them. It just shows the explosiveness of those two forwards. Aguero and Negredo already have 48 goals between them in all competitions this season, and that's staggering. I think Spurs, they've really improved under Tim Sherwood, and a key point to that has been the introduction of young Bentaleb in the middle of midfield. He's provided a holding role and he's really stabilised that Spurs team. Adebayor being reintroduced to the side has given them a more physical option up front. But again, you wonder how long it's going to last with Adebayor and whether he'll be able to do it against a defence as resolute as Manchester City's with Vincent Kompany in there.
I don't want to stay on the away form of City, but do Tottenham have to make that sort of, as they'd say in the States, home field advantage kind of count this evening, tomorrow night, sorry?
I think they have to. It's the only way they're going to be able to sort of get a result tomorrow night, because Manchester City, you can't see any scenario where Spurs can keep a clean sheet. The fans have got to get behind the team. They've got to look to be creative when they have the ball and try and make most of the chances they're going to get, because they will get chances, especially if Martin Demichelis plays, because he's been known to be a bit lax on his positioning this year for City.
Have you noticed a distinct change in the playing style that Spurs have had? You obviously mentioned Bentaleb coming in, and Adebayor's changes in form seem to change as quickly as the tide does. But do you think that Sherwood's brought in a different playing style to OVB that the team are relishing under, or is it just a case of a different face, a different leader in charge?
Well, it's interesting you should mention this, because just before his appointment, everyone felt Sherwood would bring the classic English 4-4-2 system and belief into that Spurs team. But with the introduction of Bentaleb as a holding midfielder, it's been very much a more continental feel about the system. He just holds everything together like Andrea Pirlo does for the Italian national team. He sits in front of the defence and he never passes it more than 5-10 yards, slightly in front of him or to the side. But it's enough to take the pressure off the Spurs defence and bring the more creative players into play. I mean, Eriksen's really flourished since the introduction of Bentaleb as that stabilising force in the midfield.
And Chris, finally, arguably the biggest game coming up this midweek in the Premier League is, of course, the Midlands derby between Aston Villa and West Bromwich Albion. For Villa, it's a side who Paul Lambert seems to take a lot more flack than most other managers, yet Villa are still up into 10th and could still finish with a mid-table finish this year. West Brom, on the other hand, struggling a bit, but a new manager in, maybe not needed with the change of Steve Clarke. How do you see that one going? Because it's two sides that West Brom seem to get a lot of praise, yet struggle. Villa, on the other hand, doing okay this year and really taking a lot of flack still.
Absolutely, that's something I've wondered myself as well, especially over the last two seasons. Lambert's come in to the Villa job and he's brought a lot of young players in, and last year you could see they struggled at times and they didn't deal with the pressure, but I thought they've really improved. Benteke's always a threat, and after he got his goal against Liverpool, he seems to be back within the scoring. And you think they're going to be a difficult team to play against, especially against West Brom, who have struggled recently. But the new manager, Pepe Mel, I noticed in his debut match against Everton, West Brom, whilst it was fleeting, the creativity was very impressive in part. They looked to be passing it, one-touch passing. It was very, very much like the way Real Betis side played last season. That if they can get those small pockets of good passing football into a more wide time slot, I think they'll be a very dangerous team to play against in the second half of the season.
Chris, it's an absolute pleasure to have had you on World Football Daily today for breaking down, especially tactically. Love it when people break down tactically some of these teams and some of these games that are coming up for us this evening and tomorrow night. Which are the two that you're going to be having your eyes on, though? I assume it will be the Liverpool derby and Tottenham Manchester City, or is there anything else that you're really going to be watching intently?
Well, the Manchester United and Cardiff fixture, I think, is the one I'm going to be watching intently on Tuesday night, because it's just such an interesting match. There's a feel-good factor around Old Trafford for this game. For the first time in a while, the signing of Mata has given the fans and hopefully the squad a lift. And the return of Ole Solskjaer, that's just going to boost the fans. It'll be a real atmosphere and a great opportunity for Manchester United to start a winning run. And on the Wednesday, I think you can't look further than Spurs and Manchester City. That's good. They're always good games in recent years. Aside from the odd anomalous fixture where Spurs have conceded a lot of goals, they've been very good tactical battles. And I think we're going to see something similar along those lines tomorrow night.
Chris, enjoy your football over the next two nights. And we've very much enjoyed having you on the show today, mate. We look forward to catching up with you very soon indeed.
Thank you. Bye.
Cheers, Chris. Take care, mate. Chris Winterburn there joining us here on World Football Daily, talking all things Premier League football from the upcoming two nights of action. And Chris, you can follow it. Chris Win 4 with a capital C. Chris Win 4. ChrisWin4 on Twitter. Top lad for coming on and joining us here on World Football Daily, taking us through, as I say, some of the games. And the feel-good factor. Is it too nice, though, around Old Trafford? I don't know.